driving through the areas afterwards was to be honest, I don't want to over hype it, but it was pretty horrifying. You know, driving through areas where homes were just gone, the bushland was completely devo. And, you know, we went to the local shops once we moved back, right in the area where the fires were. This was the Wimberley fires. We went to our local shops there, and there was a mood, there was an atmosphere that was I really wouldn't want to experience again. I was actually at work, and I was looking at the Fires Near Me app, I think it was. Anyway, I found out that there was a fire, and it started in a street that I knew a friend lived in.
This is Brad Murray from the School of Life Sciences at the University of Technology, Sydney.
And so I've just grabbed my bag, jumped on the train, and head back. And as I've headed back, I've actually got footage from the train. You can see the huge smoke plumes coming off the Blue Mountains. People were freaking out on the trains. There was a guy incredibly worried. He was losing it because his family was still up there. So that has an impact. You know, I managed to get home, and we waited a couple of days, but then a friend of mine worked with the RFS said that there was a really bad day coming up because the fires went for several days. And he said, he's getting his family out, probably should get my family out. So we had a six-month-old child as well, so it was amazing. No, but that shows that, like, I understand, on the one hand, I do understand the stresses and the scariness of it all, and that's what's prompted me to try and understand the how it works and what we can do to try to fight fires at the home zone, you know, like in the urban areas. It's trying to find a way that, yes, you need fires, but, yes, we also need to be able to live safely. So over the last few years, we've been looking at understanding flammability of plant leaves. So we look at a range of different species and we compare which ones are more flammable with which ones that are less flammable.
From what I got from your reading, just a little bit about your research, is that the exotic leaves or the exotic species are more flammable. Why is that?
Yeah, look, that's a really good question. They're flammable in some ways and equivalently flammable in others. So it's a little bit tricky. When the leaves are fresh, so when you collect them fresh off the plant, our work looking at comparing natives and exotics from bushland around Sydney has shown that those fresh leaves don't really differ in flammability much. When they dry out and they're like leaves in the litter bed, the exotic leaves are significantly faster in igniting. So they'll catch fire much more quickly than dry native leaves.
What actually defines, or how do you define what an exotic plant species is?
Yeah. No, look, that's a really good question. Technically, simply, I work on the definition that if it's been introduced by human activities in whatever way to an area that it wouldn't naturally be a part of, it's an exotic species. Things like lantana, which people would know, African olive, I've mentioned before, there are invasive pines, lots of smaller things, agapanthus. This is an interesting thing. A lot of these exotics you can buy from garden shops, you know, and some of these are invasives. So that's another question. So
the crux of your research is essentially looking at the symbiosis of exotic and native, more so near people's houses as opposed to what's out in the bush, because like the bush is big.
That's exactly right. Why that's important is that if you get exotic species coming in, where you find a lot of exotics on the edge of bushland around along roads, you'll find that if the exotics are there, they're dropping more leaves, the leaves are more flammable, you're going to get quicker fire spread.
Right, so what is it particularly about the leaves? Is it just because they're from a different plant, or they're not used to a fire culture or fire ecosystem that we have here in Australia? Is that what makes them more flammable?
Yeah, mate, look, you know, you're hitting on the real guts of stuff here. This is the really interesting stuff for us. Where we're starting is to look at other traits of the leaves, so how big the leaves are, what they contain, their chemical compositions, their water contents. And look, it's pretty well established that leaf water content is possibly, you know, one of the major components. So one of the reasons that the exotic leaves are as equivalently flammable as the natives when they're fresh is because they have a very high, significantly higher water content than the natives. So that's why people say plant exotics, right? But they don't understand also that natives have the same kind of resistance to flammability. And one of the areas we really want to delve into is the volatile oils, especially things like eucalypts.
So does that mean that eucalypt leaves are quite flammable or not so?
Yeah, yeah. Like they're pretty well known to be very flammable.
But they're a native species, aren't they?
Yeah. So, and there's an idea that you know, it's called the Much hypothesis, that a lot of Australia's vegetation has evolved to be flammable. So that once they're adults, they promote fire because then you get this beautiful ash bed on the forest floor that's high in nutrients and perfect for seedlings to germinate and grow. That's a hypothesis that's really hard to test because it's an evolutionary thing. So you've got to come up with some clever ways of trying to get at that.
I was on your website and the first thing I wanted to check out was all the photos, and one photo was where you're, I don't know where you are, but you're out in the bush and you're actually standing next to a wildfire. Like is that a common thing for you to do in your line of work?
Yes and no. That was actually a wonderful experience. I was working with the RFS up in the Blue Mountains.
RFS is
Rural Fire Service in New South Wales, yeah. They were doing what's known as a hazard reduction burn. They burn off a bunch of vegetation in the hope that it will enable them to have areas to work in to prevent future fires from spreading. And it's a way of reducing the amount of flammable material before the fire season.
Being in the proximity of these plants burning, does that give you insight into how it all happens actually on the ground?
Absolutely. One of the key things there is potentially seeing fires in areas where you wouldn't normally see fires. So some of the alpine areas in Tasmania that recently burnt, that should really probably see fires once in 100 years, if that.
What brought that on?
I don't recall what started it, but it spread so rapidly. And you can see these images, you know, these images from space almost, of these huge tracts of Tasmania that are just decimated. And in terms of the plants and the animals that were there, who are in those systems, trying to re-establish after those sorts of fires, which they're unaccustomed, it's some of them may never come back. Some of those systems may never come back. But I think one of the underpinning ideas is that what we're seeing with climate change, with the more intense fires, is a big part of it.
So how do things like climate change or unexpected fires challenge your research?
Oh, that's a good question. Yeah. Wow.
Or do they make it that there's more research to do?
Yeah, well, that's exactly it. So I guess one of the things that we're sort of thinking about is, we might normally look at the flammability of areas of vegetation in areas that are fire prone. Perhaps we should be looking at areas that don't necessarily burn as much or as often, and see how they compare in terms of their flammability. And I guess I look at climate change more as an impetus, in that we are seeing more fires, more intense fires. Let's understand how fires work.
I remember growing up as a kid, I was made shit scared about it. And my parents, because I live near Barara. And so that's a really fire-prone area as well. We're kind of just brought up to be scared by it. Like you said, although maybe getting worse or they're getting more intense is with things like climate change and so on, they're still a naturally occurring event.
No, they are. And this is what we need to understand, is that it's like fear of spiders, you know. It's probably a primal instinct to want to run, but we do have to understand, I think, that fires are an inherent part of these systems. And if we learn how to manage the way that we live, say by fire-friendly gardens or fire-unfriendly gardens, wherever we want to put it, if you want to live somewhere close to the bush where you've got the benefits, the services that those ecosystems provide for you, everyone in the mountains understands that, you know, and most people living in these sorts of areas understand that, look, fires are a natural part, they're a pain in the butt, but that's just the way it is. You know, I know people who live in these areas, their house has been destroyed, they just rebuild. Maybe they'll rebuild with different materials, using the latest knowledge. But fires are natural parts of these ecosystems.